whispered hushed and low, they seemed to be afraid. As if a ghost had stood right up and walked out of its grave. His face was shallow and dirty, his skin like leather hide. Sure spoke like any man, but something wasn't right. So I twisted on my stool and turned to him and said, "Thanks, sir, but just say my..."
And welcome to another Behind the Panels one-shot special. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
This special, we had the opportunity to speak with Australian writer Christian Reed. Christian's written for comics, the stage, RPG, short stories, and journalism. He's best known in the comics world for his Gestalt comic, The Eldritch Kid, Hate and Whiskey, and he's got a new novel coming out also through Gestalt called Black City. We spoke to Christian about his novel, his writing, his comics work, including some of his upcoming stuff, including his gritty supervillain story, Unmasked. You can find Christian online at christianreed.com. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Christian Reed. You can also see him at the Oz Comic Con coming up on the 6th and 7th of July in Melbourne. Details for that, hit up ozcomiccon.com. We hope you enjoy this interview. Christian Reed, thank you for joining us today in the studio.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to actually have someone here in the studio with us. We've been doing a lot of phone interviews on the show in the past, and it's great to have a local writer on, and I guess on that, one of the first things I wanted to ask you was, how difficult is it to establish yourself as a full-time writer in Sydney, Australia?
Well, depending on what kind of a writer that you want to be, it's hard for everybody. Mm. Getting into comics and stuff is pretty hard. Mm. You can't... Comics, especially sort of Marvel and DC comics, it's very much, very, very much a who-you-know industry.
Mm.
Very, very much. And even leaving aside that personal connection, which cost you, $2,000 to fly over and $1,000 to stay and try and, meet an editor and impress them with the work, is that, your comic is not something that they want to carry around.
Mm.
That's their job. And so it's just very hard to get a comic into somebody's hands to say, okay, well, I want to go on and make this professional. Doing the comic is easy. You just find an artist, draw, self-publish, stick it up online. It's different. Even from when I started about 10 or 12 years ago doing comics, the internet's changed everything. Mm. We started out before even Photoshop was really that effective a tool. I remember our first comics, me and Scott Fraser were, doing zip tones with acetate and stuff like that. Hand coloring, things like that, so now it's very, very different. But if you want to make it full-time work, you got to work a lot, and you just got to make a commitment to do it. There's no secret that I can reveal. I'm not hoarding on the mystery secret academy that I went to and transformed my life at. You just write a lot, and keep writing. That's all there is to it. Keep publishing. Keep getting the work out there to people. Don't write just in comics. Just don't be discouraged. Don't be criticized. Be critiqued. Don't be criticized. And that's it. There's no other secret. Just write and send the stuff out.
So you've had several publications out now as comics, and you've got your first novel coming out through Gestalt as well, which is The Black City. Did you always intend to write in comics, or was that something you fell into just as a natural course of being a writer?
Well, I started a long time ago with a whole bunch of comics that are now out of print and impossible to find, stuff like Dunwich, which was a Cthulhu story, and The Watch, which was a superhero stories. The original Eldritch Kid miniseries and Witch King with Paul Abstruse and stuff like that. And that was all with another company called Phosphorescent, who have now gone. So all that stuff is out of print and hard to find. So I stopped. I wasn't that interested in working for Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who work for Marvel and DC, and it just doesn't sound fun, man. It just sounds like a hard slog, and just, it's gotten worse. So I stopped and I started writing for computer games. Mm-hmm. I got a job with a company called Funcom writing on a game called The Secret World, which was an MMO. And it was around that time, I think it was just before I was leaving. It was over in Norway, so I moved over to Norway. And I think it was just before I left, Wolfgang had reached out to me through one of the artists, through the original Eldritch Kid artist, Chris Bones. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, okay, I'll come back to comics. And then I wrote that, Whiskey and Hate. So I got into comics just because I loved them, pretty much. I always liked them. My interest arc was, very, very typical. When I was a little kid, down at the supermarket, down at the secondhand dollar shop, used to buy all those big Murray reprints of, Creepy and, all the old Warren horror comics and stuff, and the war comics and things like that, which I absolutely loved. Slowly got into superhero comics, discovered girls, got out of superhero comics.
It's all sounding very familiar, isn't it, David?
Yeah. And then sort of at about 19 or 20, I'm probably a little bit older, probably about, sort of last year of high school, which is a dramatically bad time to get back into comics. Yep. I stopped studying and got into comics again. And there was some interesting superhero comics starting to come out, and that was when what became Vertigo was coming out, that British invasion.
Yeah.
Which is all proving how very old I am.
I have that problem every week.
Yeah. And, and that was back, where you could go buy Doom Patrol and Sandman and things like that. That wave of stuff was coming in, and that was me in comics, and I sort of realized, I really want to be involved in this somehow. So there you go.
You've sort of touched on it already, just the idea that things have really changed in the last few years, particularly here in Australia. Have you noticed, companies like, you mentioned Wolfgang from Gestalt a moment ago, and do you think there are voices and faces and these companies that are coming along that have really helped reshape Australian comics? It really seems like to be a new golden age for Australian comics at the moment.
I think it's a little early for golden age.
Maybe not golden age, but we're certainly coming up.
But, you got Zombie Cities is popular. You got Winter City, is it? Sorry, if I've forgotten. Porcupine and his mob.
Yep.
Lee Rigossi is producing fantastic work. There's more work out there. Tom Taylor's doing great. Nicholas Scott's doing great. Wolfgang is publishing some good quality work, with more to come and some reprints, and slowly we'll be starting to reprint some classic forgotten Australian work.
I've noticed things like Milkshadow Books printing a lot of classic stuff.
Milkshadow is back, and soon we'll see stuff like Morton Stone Undertaker's coming back. Original Ashley Wood stuff from when he was a kid and things like that. So between that whole sort of new school of guys who have come up in the last, sort of 3 or 4 years, really. Gestalt, which is probably in about 5 years old now. It's a little bit older than that, but publishing properly for about 5 years. Yeah, there's new stuff and all the time. And it's easier now, You can promote on the internet a lot more easily. You can get the work out there. Airfares are no longer prohibitively expensive to get over and actually get that booth at Comic-Con to actually, physically be present to hand sell your book and let people be aware. Internet communities, that's something that's really, really changed things.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, you're not a foreign voice in the market. You're not this, this person from this strange land. Everybody's just one of the lads. Everybody's just a voice in the community. And so when you're an Australian who has a comic, suddenly you're just a person who has a comic. You're not sort of like that. You're not curiosity anymore, which is something that during the early days, with The Watch, in the early days, when The Watch was doing really, really well, we were shipping thousands of books. It was a successful book. But it sort of was always this, it's that weird little Australian comic. And that stigma has absolutely gone.
You see a lot more Australian writers working overseas as well.
Yeah, and now, there's Australian faces on telly and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That are, on movies and things like that. So, and I do think that has changed. And I think those are the big changes that I've seen, is that sort of the comic buying market seems to be a lot more international now. And
And perhaps even seeking out those comics that they wouldn't seek out before because they had a platform to do so.
Yeah, it's like it's more international. It's easier to get to sell your books to people.
Mm.
And the market is just more receptive, I think.
Mm.
And now as well, you know, we got a company like Gestalt.
Yeah.
It's quality, you know.
Yeah.
There's no question. It's not a zine. It's not a small guy trying to break in. It is a professional publication.
And that's what's really impressed me with the publications that Gestalt have put out, that they're very, very high quality comics compared to those sort of zines that were coming out before. And it's Gestalt who are putting out your novel, Black City. I was wondering, with that novel, we're assured, is going to be up on Amazon, hopefully by the time this recording goes out.
Yep. It'll be up by now.
It'll be up by now. And could you tell us a little bit about, if you'd summarise for our listeners, what that novel's about?
It is what they used to call the psychic investigator genre, but is now kind of like the, what do they call it? There's like a fancy new term, dark fantasy or something, or horror, like I used to call it. But basically, it's the story of an occult investigator, and of a man who kind of like used to be the sheriff of all these competing cults and magical cabals and things like that. And he'd lost his job and is now out on his own in the cold. And he gets a job from his old organization, go and sort out, you know, this secret cult war that's begun, and that sort of drags him into an ongoing mystery. And at the same time, there's some fallout from that war, which has begun to happen all across the city, and is beginning to touch the lives of people all across the city. And it's kind of like, I really wanted to take on that character, that occult investigator character, mm-hmm. who would always be my favourite, and really get involved in what makes that kind of, you know, that sort of a man tick, you know. Why do we continuously like that sort of a character? You know, he's not new. Karnak, who we're going to talk of, he's based on Karnak, who was one of the very first.
Right.
John Silence, you know, moving all the way up to your modern day ones, you John Constantines, and it's they're kind of like reflections that have now hit the television and stuff. And that's what I really wanted to talk about, and I wanted to say, let's talk about the magic part of this, because that seems to have been forgotten.
Yeah, you seem to be. I mean, magic is obviously it's a theme that runs throughout a few of your works. It certainly runs throughout Black City. It runs throughout Eldritch Kid. It also runs in the upcoming Karnak as well, as you've mentioned.
Yes.
Did you? I mean, obviously, this is something that interests you personally, I would imagine. And you almost touch on virtually every type of magic that I'd heard of, and many that I hadn't, in Black City. Was there a lot of research that went into that?
I've been into this stuff since I was a little kid. A little tiny kid. Like, you know, first book I ever got out of the library at the age of 4 was about magic. So, you know, and I was, for readers of a certain extreme advanced age, they're going to immediately recognise the term man, myth and magic, the old encyclopedias that I think Donald Tyson or someone put together. And love it. Love those religious systems, those rituals, those ideas that people have about how the world works and how you can influence the world, the semiotics of magic, the act of belief, and the way that it's become kind of in defiance of, you know, even though the world is sort of emphatically shifting towards a naturalistic scientific point of view, correctly. But nevertheless, people are becoming more and more involved in these ideas all the time. And that is one of the things I wanted to talk about in Black City. I wanted to talk about, you know, how does magic world in a magic work, fantastical, but historically real magic work, in that milieu of crime, in that idea of, you know, the mean streets, as they used to call them, you know, back in the day, back in the old days, that hard-boiled setting. And even though it's not really a kind of Chandler-y, you know, tough guys talking out the corner of their mouths, sort of old-school hats and shadows sort of a book, but that was part of the influence. I wanted to see, you know, how would this look reflected down in the gutters? How would it look if it was ugly, you know, and not this kind of almost religious thing that so often it is in cultures.
Which a theme you touched on a lot throughout the book, the idea of, you mentioned semiotics, but, you know, the power of language as a kind of magic. And I know it's something Alan Moore speaks about a lot, about the power of, you know, to cast a spell is dispelled, is, you know, the word and the power of words.
Yeah, all that stuff.
And whatever you imbue meaning in is what becomes your magic.
That was absolutely one of the things I wanted to draw in. It's funny is that it wasn't until I was finished the first draft, I looked back and I saw that text was all the way through the book. That one of the maybe big subplots is that someone has stolen one of these scrolls from debris from this supernatural war that's happened and has begun to use it as a guide to graffiti. One of the main characters is this graffiti artist. And she has very unwisely chosen to use it as a tag. And so that's one of the big themes. The main character himself, Lark, he reads a lot. You know, that's how he becomes an effective magician, by studying and practicing. And, you know, he's not kind of... there's no chosen one, you know, there's no sort of inbuilt talent. It's not a superpower that he has, you know, God or a radioactive spider didn't, magical radioactive spider didn't bite him, you know. And that's sort of one of the things all the way through, is that you get this by working, you get this by reading, and that's reflected in how magic works all the way through, is that it is a thing that you reflect on and reflects on to you, which I've always sort of... I'm getting a little bit airy-fairy here, but was a way for me to talk about the relationship between a book and its reader.
Mm.
How you change a book and a book changes you. So,
yeah, it's and certainly that's very, as you said, very much a strong theme throughout at the book. And but you also mentioned kind of those sort of Chandler influences, and, you know, or change, you know, that Chandler-esque sort of characters with a particular... writers that you were influenced by when putting this together, or because there's a definite beat to the language that I found as you go throughout it.
There is only one person who I consciously think of as Bhagavad Gita, Charlie Houston, or Charlie Huston, as I think I've heard it pronounced, but I'm going to call it Houston because that sounds better. But he wrote this series of books called the Joe Pitt Case Books, which were these vampire novels. And my best mate said, "You've got to read these books." And I was like, I'm not reading vampire novels. I can't do it." And he just went, "Shut up, read them. You'll love them." And they were kind of like this, you know, there's a great crime writer from the 80s and the 90s by the name of Andrew Vax, who really bought in that absolutely truncated prose of, you know, no descriptors, no verbs, no anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he brought that to the vampire, Charlie Houston, brought that Vax style to the vampire novel, which I thought was fantastic. Yeah. There's a great vampire battle that's described like this: "I bit out her eye." That's it. No. Nothing, just completely pared back. And I really like the idea of approaching sort of this occult, you know, war, but forcing myself to have to use these kind of spare beats in the language,
because this is a big... I mean, a lot happens in this book. You say it's an occult war, it's an all-out, almost apocalyptic event here. But it is that very street-level gritty.
Yeah, kind some of stuff goes pretty wrong for these dudes. And so that really interested me. I mean, all of it was about, you know, I need to describe these things, but I can't always rely on a florid language.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to. And I thought that the juxtaposition between some of this stuff demands being talked about, but I can't. And that's how come, you know, there's multiple texts throughout the book as well. You know, there's interviews with people. There's descriptions of camera stuff. So just finding ways to communicate that without, you know, being able to write some sort of, you know, lengthy essay on it, which also just kept it from being an essay,
yeah,
which would have been super boring. So, yeah,
Well, to shift to your comic work, which is very much where you're relying on a different type of language in some ways, you're relying on a visual language as well to complement your words. The Eldritch Kid, Whiskey and Hate, is probably the comic that you're best known for.
Absolutely.
It's another one out from Gestalt, and it's been released as a beautiful trade paperback I've got sitting here in front of me. Was that always intended to come out as a comic?
Yep. Eldritch Kid was always a comic. It came out of a dream. I dreamt some early pages of it, which got into I've seen print somewhere else, but I had this distinct image of the kid shooting a guy through the head. It moved back onto his rune pistols, onto his rune carved pistols. Mm-hmm. And I woke up going like, "Hello, who are you?" And sort of slowly developed, and it was always a comic, always meant to be a comic. As I said, I'd written some comics before, but I think Eldritch Kid was the one where it first really began to click for me as a writer. Mm. You know, how to effectively communicate these visuals. And you'll see if you read it, you'll see there's actually quite a few lengthy silent sequences.
Mm. So, yeah. And I mean the visuals in this are beautiful, and is it Michael Meyer?
Michael Meyer.
Did the working with Michael, did that change the direction at all? Did his visuals coming back to you, or were you very directive on the visuals for this?
I'll tell you a funny story about Michael. We've worked together for going on 4 years now, and we've never spoken.
Really?
Yep, we've only ever communicated by email. If working with him, yes, it absolutely did have an effect. I'd actually written the script for a long time. We'd had another artist who'd been on it, and he couldn't commit to the work, and so he got let go. And we found Michael. An artist friend of mine said, "Go and look at this guy's deviant page," and he had this magnificent picture of a kind of mummy in a red cape with 2 6 guns on his hips. And I thought, "Oh, you're the man!" You know, it was amazing. You know, next page, this incredible picture of, you know, Ogami Ito from Lone Wolf and Cub, just all in pen and ink. Ah, gorgeous. So, do you want to come work on a comic for not very much money? It's going to be hard and long, but at least it'll be difficult. So poor old Michael, he didn't know what he was doing. He goes, "Yeah, man, I'll do that." Thunk. Here's like 90 pages of script. And as the pages came in, I began to then go and work changing them, not really changing them, never really modifying them, but sort of emphasizing what he was good at, you know. But That's a relationship that you don't get with an artist,
yeah,
easily and first time. And you know, it certainly changed our upcoming project, Karnak. It was written for him. He was the only artist I ever approached to do it. He said, "You know, I want to work with you again, man, but I need a break from Magical Cowboys." And I thought, you know, well, I've got an idea for this. Wolf had tasked me. He had said, "We're going to try a bit more of a French-style publication."
Yeah. It seems to be a direction Gestalt's heading a lot, the European market.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we had... So Wolf said, "Okay, we're doing 44-page, 9-in-1s with the potential for spin-offs, for sequels and stuff like that."
Mm-hmm.
"That's the next book I want to see from you, Christian." So I had the idea for Karnak, and approached Michael, and he said yes. So it's very much about... I think that some of the things that he does exceptionally well is he does the mood. He can create mood out of a simple image and colour that other people can't. Mm.
It is beautiful art, and I definitely encourage people to go on and at least have a look at the versions on Gestalt's website if they haven't already. Check out the
hardcover. There's a preview up on gestaltcomics.com, and it's available online, and come and see us at a convention or order it through your local comic shop. It's on through, you can get it anywhere.
I certainly found my hard copy right here in Sydney in King's Comics. It was sitting at the front counter.
Excellent. King's Comics has been very kind to us. But Yeah. So some of the things that I created with Karnak was the, again, I didn't rely so much on words because I knew the Michael, and because Karnak is essentially a horror story, it's essentially a haunted house story. Creepy, you know, is everything in a haunted house story. So leaving him alone to just let those images work on the reader without me yammering on going like, oh, I'll be scared. It's the scary bit. Avoided all that. And so absolutely my relationship with Michael has evolved. And very soon we get together to talk about Eldritch Kid 2, Bone War.
I was going to ask you if the Eldritch Kid will ride again. So Bone War.
Yes, absolutely. Bone War. It's based on a on the fantastic version of a... for those people who haven't read Eldritch Kid, it's kind of like a supernatural cowboy where the tagline is all the myths, magic and monsters are real. So this is the fantastic equivalent of a relationship that two paleontologists in the Old West had.
Right.
Who hated each other. Their enmity was so great that they signed a letter to have each other's brains weighed after they were both dead to see who was smarter once and for all. And they, from what started out as kind of like sniping at each other in academic journals, ended with somebody dynamiting somebody else's train full of bones. And so that's pretty cool. So this is the mythological version of that war. So
in the Eldritch Kid, there's a sequence where they talk about his past adventures, and you kind of these single panels. Have you ever thought about going back and exploring any of those stories?
Nah. Stuff like that's always better in your head than what you could hear. The, as Michael calls it, the Snake Plissken moment. So, kid thought you were dead. So, I don't believe in prequels. They never work out. Does anyone ever like prequels?
I actually said that this morning.
Well, we actually went we've literally just come from Monsters University, which is the prequel. First thing David said when we walked out, he said, the problem was, as much as we loved the film and it was fun, we know what happens at the end. We know where it's going to end up.
Yeah, prequels always have that problem.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know. I do have an idea for sort of in the same universe as... In the Eldritch Kid, this kind of like all magic is real, all monsters are real, and everybody knows it. I've actually got the first, probably half of the script done for a pirate story set in the 1600s.
Awesome.
Which is called Wine Dark. So, and there was a pitch running around for something set in America during the same period of time, sorry, set during in New York, sort of like people would be familiar with that time period through Gangs of New York.
Right.
And this was the story of the Queen of New York, who was a malevolent voodoo spirit. So they're not really prequels for the same story, but they would Queen of New York would definitely touch on the kid's timeline. He would be alive and around during that time period.
So not prequels, but within the same universe.
Yep. And Wine Dark would be like 1600s, golden age of piracy. So... But no, I think move forward with a story like that. Cool. I mean, you know, you take all this time to say, well, this is what's going on in his life now, establish this friendship between these two unlikely, you know, people, and then say, all right, let's not worry about that. Let's go back and find out how he was when he was a teenager. No. I just, no one likes prequels.
You'd have Eldritch Kid Jr.
Yeah.
And you've touched on it a few times already, Karnak, which is the next comic that we're expecting from you. And is that going to come out as, you're planning that as a complete graphic novel kind of thing?
Yep. That's done in the French album style, which, as I just said, that's a sort of 44.
Bon Dessinée style.
Yeah, I can't even say that word, man.
I recently interviewed a Geneva-based artist and writer, so I had to learn that one.
I've seen it written down a million times, but don't know how to say it because I'm not very bright. But
and not French, which not many of us.
That's probably the bigger factor.
Nobody in this room can claim to. That's the two words in French I know.
Yeah. But Yeah, no, like I said, we decided to experiment a bit more with that European style, and the European market seems kind of a bit more where we need to be. The American market has pretty much declared itself. I'm being a bit ungenerous because, you know, the rise of Image has said that there is room for more in the American market, but American superheroes seem to pride themselves on being superheroes, and that's all. And why there's now sort of changes that it looks like that's changing here. And there's always been sort of outliers, you know, but it's always pretty much been superhero books. So we thought, we're not really producing superhero books. I'm doing something called Unmasked, but even that's, you know, more of a crime book than a superhero book. And so we just thought, well, that's how French comics work. That's how Italian comics work. That's how most European comics work. They come out in these sort of like 44 to 66 page things. And that's what we decided to do. And I had actually, it was probably a bit of a dry run for the idea of Black City, is that in the 1900s through the 1920s, there was a writer by the name of William Hope Hodgson, and he had not the first, but one of the most prominent occult investigators, a guy by the name of Carnacki. And very interesting character. He wrote about 12 short stories. About half of them are actually supernatural. Sometimes he just debunks people. But very mysterious and interesting character. And I thought, you know, there was a, when we first had the idea, there was a bit of a bit of a trend at that point in time to sort of going back and looking at these old characters. You had League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and Planetary and people like that. And I thought, you know, I'll throw my hat in that ring. Let's see. And I'd written a Carnacki story and it just wasn't quite the same. So I chucked that and I thought, why don't we just, it's a bit wrong to say try and update it because it's a fairly new character, but I just wanted to keep that, some of the tropes of the Carnacki character and just bring him up to date and put him in a modern story. Because one of the interesting things about him is that he used technology. You know, he had the electric pentacle and things like that, which he just plugged in, and that was his protective barrier against spirits, you know. And I thought, what's that going to look like today? What's a magician who uses this kind of, for want of a better word, techno magic going to look like today? And I just thought about all my mates who are like obsessed with gadgets and iPhones and things like that. I'm just bad with technology, man. So, you know, I'm just punching at my phone, work! And headbutting things and crying. And yeah, it's not good. It's but I thought, you know, and I got a lot of friends who work in tech journalism as well. Mm. You know, they're all mad for it. So I thought, what does that look like? You know, how do you do an exorcism on an iPhone? So I wrote about it, and that's Carnac. Carnac will be, about 50 pages, I think, with Michael, same artist as EK. And yeah, kind of like my sort of, my attempt to challenge myself as well as a writer to go, well, you know, like I've written about magic a few times. How do I, I'm going to keep writing about it forever until I'm gone and no one will publish anymore. But how I write about that in ways that are new to me.
So. Yeah. Did you say that the concept of Carnac came around before Black City? Was that right, or did I mishear you?
Yeah. It's actually a little bit hazy in my dim, alcoholic, not very bright brain about which came first. But I think that I had the rough outline for the original Carnacki story. Chucked that. Carnac came along. And then I think around the same time, I said, like, well, you know, you're already writing about this psychic investigator. Do it for a proper. And I'd already written a novel and put it away. And I said, okay, well, you know, you've been meaning to write another novel for a million years. Just do it. Do it now. So that's how that happened.
Was there any temptation to ever actually write Black City as a graphic novel?
No. Because of all that stuff that I was saying before about language.
Yeah.
I can't hack comics that are overwritten. I just can't do it.
Brian Michael Bendis, right?
Yeah. the Noli War of a long time ago.
There's art behind those words somewhere.
He's the Aaron Sorkin of comics.
But one of the things, and I think this is something that's definitely missing from sort of a lot, not all, but a lot of Marvel and DC comics these days, is that there's very little skill goes into creating them as an actual comic. You know, there's like five panels, bang, somebody talks a lot, you flip the page, and there's no kind of like, you know, this whole awful decompression techniques that sort of came in about 2005 and things like that. And, you know, the older I've gotten, the more I've begun to really like kind of like the 1970s Bronze Age Marvel superheroes that are just bursting with both, you know, interesting words, strange words, and this continuous, you know, restless attempts to find new ways to tell these kind of stories. And, you know, you probably find that a lot of the new writers, they're maybe a little bit too young to have been involved in those Bronze Age stories. They have a look at television and movies and things like that, and they become their primary sort of tools that they use, and therefore they're looking at it like a flat screen.
Yeah.
Which is the worst way to look at comics in the world. So when you're seeing like just a lot of words, especially on an empty page where it's just two people looking, especially in superhero comics, the last thing I want is two people talking to each other about their emotions. But I want to see dudes smashing stuff up and having cool adventures and dealing with like radical philosophies and all that stuff. And that wasn't, if I'd written Black City like that, it would have been a lot of, you know, there's a guy alone in his room having a drink and thinking about some stuff. Not a good way to tell a comic. And so, no, it was always meant to be a novel.
Excellent. We've actually talked about this on the show many times. I mean, stuff like the current run of DC with the New 52, with the exception of maybe one or two writers, it's all very much that. It's just this, there's no depth behind it. There's, you know, it's just, we've got the exceptions, which are your Scott Snyder's, your Jeff Lemire's, and so forth. But it's really, it is disappointing at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't really looked at any of the New 52. I'm mates with Nicola Scott, and she often just gives me her long box just to take it. It's all free. And so the little that I've seen, I just think, well, you know, these aren't comics. You know, try harder, guys. Where's your ambition? You know,
yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, there's we've talked about many times. Scott Snyder is doing this remarkable run on Batman at the moment, but he's satellited by a whole bunch of fairly mediocre Batman books.
All I saw about that was the Joker's face, and I just thought a dog should run off with that. That'd be the best comic. That would be good, just the Joker chasing around a dog's face. I don't know, that's all I read. All I read now from superhero comics is pretty much just Grant Morrison comics and...
you know, and he's apparently leaving Cape soon.
So he's having another break from superhero comics, so that's about it. Haven't even been tempted by a Marvel comic in a long time.
Marvel's not bad at the moment, I have to say. If you're looking for a time to come back to Marvel...
Yeah, the stronger of the two at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I should hope so very much. Because, you know, like, Gail Simone, she's always great. Morrison, he's the man. I haven't read any of the new Scott Snyder stuff. Oh, wait, I read some American Vampire.
Yes.
That was all right. Yeah. So,
you've got to read Matt Fraction's Hawkeye on the Marvel side, which is probably the revelation of the year.
Andrew Constant, who is a...
yes.
He's a writer for Gestalt as well. He often just blindly sends me links to whatever awful thing DC have done that day.
So we
get a lot of emails, in other words.
You'll probably hear on our show out this week about the big awful event DC have got coming up in September.
What are they doing now?
They've decided to label September 2013 as Forever Evil. It's a villains month where the villains are taking over every title. And they're putting out all these 0.1 issues, 0.2 issues. But wait for it. Remember the 90s? Holographic 3D covers.
That worked out so well. Yeah. Hey! No, I won't even say that. It'll destroy my potential career.
You gotta ask yourself, if you are resorting to 3D covers, the content can't be that good.
It's like... No, it just strikes me is that I've drifted a lot away from superhero comics, especially in the last few years. You know, I've just out of just ethical reasons, if nothing else. and I'd like to go back, but you know, and like I walk into the shop and there I am, you know, buying my little black and white indies, and you know. And I go over and I look at the racks and I go, you know, give me a way back in, guys. Find a way back in for me.
Mm.
And I don't see hardly anything sort of, you know, gets my attention. So I just, you know, drop $60 on a Jack Kirby hardcover and go and read that, you know.
Yeah.
Alone in the dark now, you know. Just feeling like, you know, there's then no one with ambition.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the creator and comics have actually given us a little glimmer of hope for the future, but once they get, you know, bought and sold up by the mainstreams and contracted in, it's often more difficult for them to...
Jim Lee, who was part of Image and had his own sub-company, Wildstorm, was just bought up by DC, and then Wildstorm was basically liquidated, and he's now DC.
Yeah, so. Got it. Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to seem, you know... rude to anyone, but what I have seen is a lot of the indie creators who go over to Marvel and DC now presumably get paid a lot of money, so that's good. But within 2 years, all that stuff that made them great as an indie writer is gone. Now, is that deadlines? Is that editorial pressure? Is that, you know, I don't know what that is, but I just know that very quickly that really unique voice has disappeared into the sort of the corporate environment of Marvel and DC. Marvel and DC didn't used to be like that, you know. There's ethical concerns from day one with Marvel and DC, but back in the day, you know, a Don McGregor book sounded and looked like a Don McGregor book, and a Kirby book looked like that, and a Ditko book, and all that stuff. And then sort of now everything is just a farm for movie IPs.
Just a little bit homogenized now. So.
Yeah, just, you know, and yeah, I love superheroes, but they don't seem to love me very much right now.
It's well, you've got. Although speaking of superheroes, you have got a superhero book available on the market, and you're mentioning to us before we started recording that it's been a beleaguered kind of title for a while. Unmasked has got 2 issues available on the Stolt website, available for download. Have you got? And you said your plans to return to this book.
Yep, issue 3 should be nearly. I think we're just waiting on lettering for that. Emily Smith, the artist, unfortunately had to leave, but the mighty Gary Challinor, who is a bit of an Australian comics legend, he's doing issues 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our story of supervillains who become criminals. They give up their costumes and their capers and just make money out of crime. And it becomes a story about, well, how satisfying is crime when your true identity is this sort of flamboyant person? What do you really get out of being a criminal? What do you really get out of being a supervillain? And it's about the tension between these two, these separate parts of their identities. And we focus on the husband and wife who used to be villains, used to be successful villains, but they just got beaten up all the time. They just got, you know, they're just spending all their money on dental bills and, you know, paying the rent and stuff. So they quit. And when we rejoin them, they're kind of like just dressing up in their villain costumes for the occasional bit of dispiriting sex and pretending to be bad guys who got in the paper again. And then somebody comes along with the, hey, you know, you shouldn't have to give up. Let's go be criminals. Let's go live the life. And they go in and it works. And it's very, very, you know, if you have superpowers, you'll probably be a very good criminal. But they don't necessarily want to be criminals. They want to be villains. And that's sort of the tension that arises between their two ambitions. So, yeah, that's my swearing and jagging book. So
I'm going out to buy it this afternoon.
Thank you.
So that one's available exclusively digitally, is it?
Exclusively digitally, yep. And then we'll probably trade paperback. Well, we will trade paperback it once it's all done. So
how many issues are you thinking?
4 issues.
Total.
Yep. So, you know, like, what's that 80-page graphic novel? Yep.
Mm-hmm. So. Excellent. Fantastic. And you mentioned 2 others to me that you're working on at the moment. You've got Dread Empire and the intriguingly titled Homebrew Vampire Bullets.
Ah, Homebrew Vampire Bullets is an anthology that me and some friends mainly down in Melbourne are doing. Scotty Fraser and Garth Jones, who are sort of like the brains behind it. Scott and I have worked together a lot on my sort of zine stuff, like a character I used to do called Dude in the Coat and things like that. And then where we all used to be sort of have one foot in the zine world. They had gone to see some retrospective on some exploitation films, which for people who don't know, in the 1970s Australia had a loophole in our tax code, mm-hmm. which allowed us to make a whole bunch of what, you know, people now call grindhouse cinema. Mm-hmm. So you had this entire kind of like almost lost genre of Australian movies that people are now going back to rediscover.
Because there was that great documentary a few years ago, Not Quite Hollywood.
That's right, yeah. And so they walked out of the cinema and called me up and said, "We're doing this, do you want in?" So I went, "Yep, sure." So I've got a story, I'm writing Garth's story in that, which is the kind of Australian 70s glam band versus L. Ron Hubbard. So... another story about Flynn, who's kind of like a bogan John Constantine, and Doug's doing a story about Doug Holgate is doing a story about a Yowie, I believe. Scott's got something. So yeah, loads of guys. There's actually a big lineup of people coming on that one. So yeah, that'll be a slice of fried gold around December, hopefully.
Just in time for Christmas.
So. Yeah, that'll be good.
Or my birthday, David, in case.
That's true. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Very excited about that. Some of the art I've seen coming in from that, from the various people, is tremendously exciting. So it'd be really fun.
That sounds fantastic.
And Dread Empire is kind of like my Lovecraftian fantasy story. So it's set... Lovecraft had this thing called the Empire of San Chan, which was set in the year 5000. And he mentions it twice. In terms like, oh, and he was from the Empire of San Chan, and also there will be an Empire of San Chan. There's no details on it. So I thought I'd put in some details, and the idea is it's kind of like the last empire. If you don't know Lovecraft, is this idea that the stars will come right and that the old ones will return. And this is set after they've returned, long after they've returned, and it's kind of like the last living empire of humans, the last little enclave of humans who have some interesting survival techniques as how to stay alive and sane in this world. And this is the story of a sort of a rebellion that takes place in that San Chan Empire. And very, very much my take on how to make sort of a heroic fantasy look interesting to me. You know, I don't need to see an elf, and I don't need to see a dwarf, and I don't need to see a chamois bikini. What I do need to see is kind of like, you know, just new ways to make that fresh, and new ways to, not even fresh, it's always, you know, there's always a good fantasy thing running around, but ways to put that Lovecraftian fantasy onto those tropes of swords and robes and, for want of a better word, magic. So, there's that word again. So...
I detect a theme.
Yeah, I reckon so. Never thought about it this much before. I'm gonna go and write a story about algebra or something now, but it's art's getting done by a newcomer, and he's amazing. So yeah, more details on that shortly.
Excellent. Definitely look forward to that one. I really like anything Lovecraftian, and so it'll be good to see a different take on it. We mentioned briefly that you'll be at Oz Comic Con in July. I think that's the weekend of around the 6th and 7th of July, something like that.
Yeah, 6th and 7th. So, yeah, come and see me there. I'll be at the Gestalt booth. Come and have a look at some of the books.
And you'll be you've got that. So at the moment, people have been keeping up with that. You've currently got Eldritch Kid, Whiskey and Hate out, available through Gestalt, and that's available now. That's the graphic novel. You've got Black City available
now
online through Amazon.
Unmasked Issue 1 and 2 are out through Gestalt, and if we're lucky, Karnak could be out by... Hopefully we'll at least have a lengthy preview of Karnak out at the Comic-Con.
Excellent.
Yeah, so...
I look forward to that. Well, I'll be down at the Comic-Con, so I will be looking forward to seeing your lengthy preview of it then.
So.
And thank you so much for joining us in our little studio today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, lads.
Thank you. And that was Mr. Christian Reed. David.
Fascinating stuff. Just fascinating.
I love the whole idea of the interplay of magic and words, because as we said in the interview, it's something that Alan Moore often touches on as well in his work. So that's always a fascinating thing for me. You can see magic is something that permeates all of Christian's work. And I'd be keen to see those titles he's got coming out. I'm really interested in some of those ones he's got coming up later this year, particularly that anthology sounded particularly interesting.
The anthology
as well.
Sounds great, and as I said, I'm going out right now to start collecting the Unmasked series because it just sounds terrific fun.
Which is you can find those, in fact, all the comics we mentioned on gestaltcomics.com. You can also find Christian again, as we mentioned at the top of the show, at christianreed.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Mr. Christian Reed, and once again, you can meet him at the Gestalt table down at the Oz Comic Con in Melbourne on the 6th and 7th of July. For details of that, hit up ozcomiccon.com and stay tuned to Behind the Panels, where you can find us on behindthepanels.net. We'll be having plenty more details about that in the coming weeks. Until next time, thanks for listening.
The patrons whispered hushed low, they seemed to be afraid. As if ghost had stood right up and walked out of its grave. His face was shallow and dirty, his skin like leather hide. Sure spoke like any man, but something wasn't right. So I twisted on my stool and turned to him and said, "Thanks, sir, but just the same, I'm chasing worms instead." He growled and shoved the drink my way, his eyes as cold as death. I picked the drink, should knock him back. He'll straw against my